You have your Bible, or if you're looking online, I'd encourage you to turn to 1 Peter 3. We're walking through that book. I'm going to begin with our text this morning, and then we'll spend the rest of our time thinking about that together. 1 Peter 3, verses 1 through 7. Likewise, wives, be subject to your own husbands, so that even if some do not obey the word, they may be won without a word by the conduct of their wives. When they see your respectful and pure conduct, do not let your adorning be external, the braiding of hair, the wearing of gold, or the putting on of clothing, but let your adornment be the hidden person of the heart, with the imperishable beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which in God's sight is very precious. This is how the holy women who hoped in God used to adorn themselves by submitting to their husbands, as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, and you are her children if you do good and do not fear anything that is frightening. Likewise, husbands, live with your wives in an understanding way, showing honor to the woman as the weaker vessel, since they are heirs with you of the grace of life, so that your prayers may not be hindered. A couple of winters ago, I was on a lake up north of Minocqua. It was in the winter, and it was the end of an ice fishing day, and I was been invited to fish with a guy who had one of these portable ice houses. And any of you guys have any of those? They're really slick. You take them out, and they just pop up, like in seconds. You have this ice house out on the lake. What I learned that day is if you don't know how that thing is designed and you don't know how to break it down, it can be major problems. And so I was with this older gentleman, and he evidently had either not read or forgotten the instructions on how to collapse this thing. And if you've ever been there, it's like wrestling with a polar bear. It's like putting an octopus in a baggie. And you know, you push one part in and another part sticks out. And there were words, he's my brother in Christ, but there were words coming out of his mouth that I had never heard him say. And he concluded by saying, I'm getting rid of this thing. I'm going to go buy another one. And you know what? There was nothing wrong with that ice house. He simply did not understand how the guy who designed that had designed it in such a way that it would work, but he didn't know the design, and he didn't know how he was supposed to manage that, and so he obviously was having problems. You know what? As we look at marriage, there's a designer and a design. If you don't know the design and you don't live it out according to the design, you are going to run into significant problems. And as we know, marriage is in trouble today. And so as I just want to set the context for 1 Peter 3 this morning by just reminding us of the design of marriage. And so just quickly, let me just walk through it again. If you go back to Genesis, you'll find that there's one final verse in the New Testament, but I would say there are four major things to know about marriage. Number one, it's for companionship. The Lord looked down at the man. He says, not good for the man to be alone, so I'll make a helpmate, a counterpart for him. So marriage is intended to bring, you know, as a purpose of companionship. It's also intended to fill the earth. And so the male and the female would come together in marriage. And in that context, there would be children, there would be families. It's in the family context that the children are nurtured and can grow up in a healthy way. And so it becomes the foundational core of any society is the family unit. That's the purpose of marriage. He also says that they would become one flesh. So we see there's a coming together in oneness and unity in a amazing way. Oneness in body, oneness in soul, oneness in spirit, and God's intent was that he would dwell in the spirit of man and become also a part of this marital relationship. And then in the New Testament, there is a mystery that's revealed. We saw a few weeks ago that a mystery is something that wasn't known in the past, but is known, has now been revealed. And what the mystery was, is that marriage is a metaphor, it's a picture. It was intended by God to be a picture of the relationship, and specifically the covenant love of Christ for the church. And so it's intended to play out and to be a model of that relationship. And so that's really a powerful thing. And so we, you know, it's like God's directing this play. He's directing this drama. And he says, okay, gals, here's your script. Here's how you live this out. Guys, here's your script. Here's how you live this out. And as you do that, I want you to model the relationship between Christ and his church. And so that becomes a picture of what marriage was intended to be. There's only one major problem. It's called the curse. And so God comes to Eve after sin comes into the world, and he said, this is part of the curse. Eve, your desire will be for your husband, but he will rule over you. And commentators would say that neither the word desire or rule are good words. They're not positive words. Desire has the essence of control. Rule has the essence in it of domination. And so, gals, you're going to be under your husbands, but you're going to try and control them because it's pretty scary to live under somebody. And husbands, you're going to tend to dominate and take advantage. And so that's part of the curse. That's what works against marriage in our day. But we see that a marriage as defined by God is a relationship with a male and a female in covenant love expressed in a lifetime, for a lifetime. Biblically and historically, that is the definition of marriage. And so in the first century, Peter's writing to wives who were, many of them, living in very difficult situations. First century view of women, not good. They were considered less than men. A man could divorce his wife for anything, for burning his breakfast. Actually, that's literally true. Just about any reason at all. Wives did not even have a recourse to get out of a relationship, no matter how bad it was. And so we see that there was a lot of disproportionate things going on in the first century here. In the Greek view, men had women outside of marriage for pleasure, and they had wives to legitimately bear children. In fact, Jewish men prayed every morning, God, I thank you, I'm not a Gentile, a slave, or a woman. That shows you how bad the view was in and of itself in that day. And so we see that as you begin to read the biblical words, and you begin to hear what Jesus said, and the New Testament writers, you will see that Christianity and Jesus did more to elevate the position of women than anyone in the history of the world. And I would stand behind that. I don't have time to walk through that this morning, but Christianity and Jesus, in his words, does more to elevate the role of women than anyone. And so we see here that in this setting, we have women that are in situations with men who have this attitude of not seeing that their wives are equal of value to them and not expressing this covenant love that God has intended for marriage. And so he's speaking to wives in that kind of a situation. The words are radical. There are 6 verses for the wives and 1 verse for the men. I'm not sure what that means. Simple form. Yep, maybe it means that maybe, you know, guys are kind of like, look, just keep it simple for me, right? Just give me one or two things to remember and let me work on that. The wives probably can handle more than the men. Maybe it's a greater challenge for the women handling the men than the men handling their wives. I don't know. But we see here that there are similar, they both, if you notice, likewise, wives in verse 1 and verse 7, likewise husbands. So that's an important word as we look at this. Let me just say this up front, that there are situations in marriages that become so severe. There are situations which are extremely abusive. You know, they came to Jesus and they said, is there ever a time when a man or a woman should get out of a relationship? And Jesus basically says, look, from the beginning, that was never God's intent. God's intent was covenant love, lifelong, and yet because of the hardness of heart, because of the hardness of man's heart, God allows divorce. And in that situation, he acknowledges infidelity, which is in a sense leaving the relationship. We also know there are situations where things become so abusive and become life-threatening. And so we acknowledge there are situations that are very complex and very difficult. And we could talk a lot about that. But this morning, Peter is here to say, look, as much as in marriage, it's never going to be perfect. And so I want you to seek to live out this covenant love of God in the midst of this relationship. And so that's what Peter's speaking to here, and we'll see that as we walk through this. So notice what he says. Chapter 3, verse 1. Likewise, wives. So in the same way, wives. So what is he referring back to? It's really important. Well, he's referring back to, you know, if you go all the way back to 11, verse 11, he says, you know, abstain from the passions of your flesh and keep your conduct honorable. So in difficult situations, you need to keep your conduct honorable, and you need to set aside those natural passions of your flesh. We realize also that right before this, he talks about Jesus as the example of one who sacrificially gave himself so that you and I could have life. He gave himself sacrificially for us. So he's saying, wives, I want you to sacrificially give yourselves for your husbands, even if they're harsh, even if they're secular, even if they're carnal. He says, I want you to seek to live out a life that is honorable before them. And so we see here that, you know, as Jesus in Philippians, as he was equal with God, imagine it, he's equal with God, and yet he makes himself nothing and becomes a servant to live out that covenant love for you. When Peter talks to women about being subject to men, he is in no way devaluing women or saying that women are in any way less valuable than men, any more than Christ was less valuable than you and I because he subjected himself to us in sacrificial love. So let me just make that very clear. There is no devaluing of the woman in the biblical text. A woman does what she does voluntarily out of the strength of who she is. And so in a relationship where a woman is doing what she's doing because she is beaten down and devalued, and that is not the basis for which a woman is called to fulfill what we see here in 1 Peter 3. And so we see here that, by the way, as we see in Ephesians, submit yourselves one to another out of reverence for Christ. Wives, submit themselves to their husbands. Husbands, submit themselves to their wives. So there's a mutual submission. They just look different. And so we see here for the wives he's speaking to first. Let's just take a look at that and see what he says. So you're married to somebody who's being disobedient to the word, right? That's what he says in verse 1 there. Somebody that's disobedient to the word, so what do? Well, here's the strategy. Don't lecture. Don't talk. Don't preach at them. Just live out your life. Just live it out. He says that they may be one. They may be one. He doesn't say they will be. They may be. There's no guarantees of that. But that they may be one without a word by the conduct of their wives. So that's the strategy, is to live out a godly life and don't preach at this person. Some of you have perhaps been in situations, or maybe even are in a situation, where you're married to someone who is being disobedient to the word. And so we see here, notice specifically, he says, be subject to your own husbands. By the way, there's nowhere in the Bible that says women are to be subject to men. Let's be clear about that. A wife is to be subject to her own husband. Her own husband, not somebody else's husband, not other men. But in this relationship of marriage, God has roles for the man. He has roles for the women. It's part of living out the metaphor of the relationship of Christ to the church. And so there are roles that each one takes on. And so being subject means to voluntarily put oneself under. To put oneself under equal in value, different role, and so here is what the wife is called to do. And by the way, I'll just say this to men. This verse is not written to you. God has never told you that your wife should be subject to you. Did you know that? There's nowhere in the Bible where God talks to men and says their wives should be subject to them. I remember a counselor, and he was visiting with a couple, and the guy goes, well, isn't my wife supposed to be subject to me? He goes, who told you that? He said, well, it's in the Bible. It's in 1 Peter. So they went there. He says, no, it says wives. This isn't your verse. It's not your verse. This is written to your wife. It wasn't written to you. You have your own verse. We'll get to your verse, okay? So my admonisher would be, don't camp on your wife's verse. Camp on your own verse. God never said that to you. And so we see here, wives, be subject, which means to voluntarily put yourself in a place like Christ did. Even though he's equal, even though he's above us, he put himself under us, and he sacrificially loved us. And so wives, this is how you are to manage yourself in this situation. It says, then they will see you're respectful. So here's the first word, respect. So to be subject means to be respectful. You know, I read a study of men. They asked several hundred men. And they said, what makes you feel disrespected? And the vast majority of them said the same thing. They said, what makes me feel respected is when my wife argues with me. I don't mind if my wife has an opinion different from me. That's okay. She can say, you know what, I disagree. I don't think that's a good decision. But when she argues, I begin to feel disrespected. And so to respect here does not mean to not share what you think. But it means that once you've said what you think, then it's time to let it go. And to continue on is to begin to feel like you're trying to control this person. I clipped this article out. It's written in the New York Times from a gal. She says, what Shamu taught me about a happy marriage. Shamu is a seal. Okay, she writes, I needed to nudge my husband a little closer to perfect, to make him into a mate who would annoy me a little less wouldn't keep me waiting at restaurants, a mate who would be a little easier to love. So she writes, like many wives, I ignored a library of advice books and set out to try and improve him. By nagging, of course. Until she said, I went to a school for exotic animal trainers in California. And here's what she wrote. She said, I listened as professional trainers explained how they taught dolphins to flip and elephants to paint. And it eventually hit me the same technique might work on my husband. The central lesson I learned from exotic animal trainers is this. You reward behavior you like, you ignore behavior you don't. After all, you don't get a sea lion to balance a ball on the end of his nose by nagging him. That's a great point. And so, if Scott threw one dirty sock in the hamper, I'd thank him. If he threw in two, I'd kiss him. And amazingly, the piles got smaller and smaller. Now that's, you know, it's kind of a funny, simple thing, but there's an amazing truth there. And that is that by trying to control or trying to nag or do that kind of thing, all we do is create a sense of disrespect. And so respect your husband. He uses another word to describe what that means, and he says pure conduct. Being subject never, I'll use the word never, it never involves doing something impure or unholy that a husband would ask someone to do. If your husband wants you to go to the bar and get drunk with him, that's not what the Bible's saying when it says be subject. It says that by your pure conduct, even if they react, they will know the purity of your conduct. And so by pure conduct, and then he talks a lot here about inner beauty. Now, we live in a culture with, there is so much on beauty that's out there, and there's so much focus on outward appearance. And so we see here for wives, he says, let your adornment, by the way, this is not saying there's anything wrong I've run into people who say, well, this means you shouldn't wear jewelry or, you know, you shouldn't braid your hair but I don't think that's what it means. He says, you know, if you notice what he says here, he says, it shouldn't be external, the braiding of hair, wearing of gold, or putting on of clothing. Well, I think we put on clothing, right? He's not saying we don't do these things. He said, that should not be the focus of your beauty. Now, God made women with beauty. It's part of his creation. You should take care of yourself. You should present yourself. That's something that I think you could make certainly a biblical case, but here's the issue. Beauty fades. Beauty is fading. Outward beauty. But there's an inner beauty that is amazing. We just celebrated my aunt's 100th birthday. She has there's a beauty in her that everybody knows in our family, and it's what he's talking about here. It's this inner beauty. It goes beyond appearance, and it has to do with our words and our actions. And so he describes a couple of them. Notice what he says there. He says, those who submitted, that they have a gentle and a quiet spirit. A gentle spirit. Gentle spirit, the word gentle is like strength under control. Strength, that's the word gentle, that's the picture. It's like strong in character, but yielding in control. And so to have a gentle spirit, and then it says also quiet. Now the word quiet does not mean silent, by the way. Does not mean silent. It's interesting. It means non-combative or non-argumentative. So he's saying, wives, don't be argumentative with your spouse. Have a quiet spirit. You know, just try listening. I had a couple once, and there was a guy and a gal, and they came out. I said, let's just try something. She was a talker, and I said, why don't one of you listen and one of you talk? Let's just try that. And the gal said, oh, I'll listen. And so I said, okay, let's do that. So I'm the guy, you're going to talk, and when you feel like she's heard what you heard exactly what you're saying, then we'll flip it around. So he talked for about 10 minutes, and she seemed kind of tense, but she listened to, you know, what he said. We got done, and I said to him, I said, so what was that like? He said, that was amazing. He said, that has never happened in our marriage. My wife has listened to me for 10 minutes. I said, well, how's that for you? She said, I thought my brain was going to explode. She said, there were so many things I wanted to say as he was talking. That's the problem, right? And so listen. Learn to listen. Gentle, quiet spirit. And so we have these admonitions to say, you know what? Rather than just going, running out and getting a different tent, a different ice house, there are some things you need to do in the one you're in. You can't control your husband, but you can control yourself. And so live out the design God has for you, and God may use that, he may use that to change your marriage. He talks about Sarah, you know, how she submitted herself. It's interesting. I love this phrase, you know, you are her children if you do good and do not fear anything that is frightening. That's an interesting phrase. Don't fear something that's frightening. So Abraham says, hey, honey, we're leaving. She says, where are we going? I don't know. She says, okay. She may have said more than that. But in the end, right, in the end, she goes. And she's given credit for that. And they go down to, like, the south side of Chicago. They go down into Egypt. And that's where, she, you know, Pharaoh takes her. And, I mean, that was an incredibly traumatic thing. So she had lots of things that she could be afraid of in subjecting herself to her husband. And so she's given as an example of someone that went ahead and went along and didn't say, hi, honey, I'm staying home with the family and the grandkids. Let me know how it goes. She went with him. Being out of control. By the way, guys, if you imagine if we got up this morning and we flipped it. We said, you know what? You're now to be subject. You're to be put yourself under your wife, okay? In terms of what does that feel like? I'm like, what's going to happen? Is she going to sell my boat? Is she going to, I mean, you put yourself in that position, and that's a vulnerable place to be. It's a vulnerable place to be. And so we see here that there's this battle with fear, being out of control and in being subject to someone else. All right, let's move lastly to the men. The men get like one verse, all right? But notice what it says, likewise. It's no different. Just like the wives are submitting themselves and putting themselves under and all this, so the men, the model's the same, sacrificial love, a mutual submission here. And so here's what he said, the guys are basically to be sacrificial servant leaders in the home. Live in an understanding way according to knowledge is what that means. Understand your wife. That's a lifelong process, right? It's a lifelong process. I remember early on, we'd just been married. My wife calls from a bar and she says the car's overheating and I don't know what to do. And I said, well, honey, I'm thinking, all right, I'm going to tell her exactly what's wrong, and in 5 minutes, I'll have her out of there and back on the road. Because it was about a 20-minute drive from where I was, so I said, you know what, if it's on hot, if you just let it sit for 5 minutes and then unscrew the radiator cap and get some water and put it in there because it's just a little low. I mean, my wife doesn't even probably know where the hood latch is, right? I'm talking about radiator caps and putting in water, and so eventually she wasn't getting it, and I said, okay, you know what? I'll be there. I'll just come. And I came, and I remember it. I was walking up, and I was going to talk to her, and she absolutely walked right by me and didn't even look at me. I thought, she's mad. I have no idea what I did wrong, but she is really mad. And she said, my father would have never done that. He would have just gotten in the car and come here and said, honey, I'll take care of it. Don't worry about it. Well, I was just trying to be helpful. But I learned that my wife thinks differently than I do, and I've had to learn that lesson over and over. So, husbands, live with your wives in an understanding way. Understanding way. They are different, very different. Learn that about. You know, guys will take up fishing, they'll learn everything there is to learn about fishing. They'll take up golf, they'll learn everything there is to learn about golf. Why don't you learn about your wife? Why don't you take that up? Why don't you try and understand how she's wired and what makes her happy and what makes her content? And why don't you learn? If you don't know, just sit down and ask her some questions and listen. She'll tell you. And so we say here, learn. You need to live with your wives in an understanding way. And it says here, honor her, to honor her as a weaker vessel. What does that mean? Well, it doesn't mean she's weaker intellectually. Women are very, very smart, sometimes smarter than men, right, guys? It doesn't mean emotionally. A lot of women are probably more emotionally healthy than men. Talk about their feelings, they express them more, they live longer. Spiritually, certainly he's not talking spiritually. Many, many, many godly women serving in many different ways that God uses. And so I don't think it's that. It could simply, one of two things, it simply maybe the weaker vessel in strength, a woman can be overpowered physically, typically. And so it could mean that. It also could mean, you know, in a weaker position. So just remember that this person is called to serve and be subject to you. And so honor that. She's kind of putting herself under you to serve you and respect you. So honor that weaker position. It could mean be referring to a position. Whatever it is, we are to honor. We are to honor our wives. And so we see that this is the design that God has. That wives would subject themselves to their husbands, be subject to their husbands, and husbands would honor their wives. And so we see here, show me a wife who has a gentle and quiet spirit and respects her husband, and a husband who is fulfilling his role by the way which is Christ. That's his role. What did Christ do? He is the initiating, right? He is the initiating lover. He loved us while we were yet sinners. He is the one that sacrifices his life. Gals, I don't feel sorry for the gals. I think actually the guys have it harder. We maybe just don't do it. We are to offer our lives up for the church, initiating that, even when our wives are not loving us as Christ loved the church and gave himself for the church. That's quite a script to live out. And so that's what God has called the husband to do. You have a wife living out her role. You have a husband living that way. You're not going to hear much complaining. You're not going to hear people saying, well, marriage doesn't work. That's God's design. That's how it works. When it's not working, says Peter, you can either go get another tent, or, says Peter, my advice would be to you to seek to live in an honorable way, to seek to conduct yourself in the way that God has designed, even if your spouse is not. And God may use that redemptively in that situation. I just conclude with this reading. This is a reading that I read probably at every wedding that I do, and I know I'm a little over time here, but let me just conclude with this. Puritans call marriage the little church within the church. This is by Mike Mason. A place to test and also develop spiritual character. Every day, marriage calls both partners to love and forgive and stay faithful. Hard work that only makes sense if we are convinced somehow we are participating in a kind of alternate history, one set in eternity, like the relationship of Christ to his church. I persevere in the difficult times of my marriage for the same reason I persevere in difficult times in my faith, because I believe both touch something of eternal significance. For most of us, it takes years, perhaps a lifetime, to realize what unity with another person means. We learn each other's strengths, weaknesses. We learn what to probe and when to back off. But eventually, a second love emerges. And over time, after much prayer and much effort, something new comes into being. A unity sealed by God, which enables us to face pressures, relocation, illness, loss of family, friends, as well as delights that attracted us to each other in the first place. I went into marriage thinking love would hold us together. I learned instead it would require marriage to teach me what love means. Father, this morning we hear these words. There's not a person in this room with a perfect marriage. Father, some have experienced the trauma of a broken marriage and relationship. Father, we see as we listen to this text this morning, that you're calling us to focus on our part, on our role, to get our eyes off the other person, to do what you're calling us to do, and to do it under the power of your Spirit. Father, as we read these words, we can only do this under the power of your Spirit. And so, Father, apart from our connection with you, apart from your filling in our lives, we cannot live out your design for marriage. So I pray that we would heed that, we would understand that we would, Father, sense this call to live in the power of your Spirit out, a covenant, everlasting, faithful love, the kind of love that you have for us. Thank you for your work in us, Father. I pray for that you just use this text in our lives today and however you desire to do that. I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.